Diabetes insights, breakthroughs, and innovators. The EASD TV podcast from the annual meeting of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes.
Hello, and welcome back to EASD TV. So today we're talking about something that would have seemed completely unthinkable 10 years ago. Yes, we're talking about a once weekly insulin. And here to talk to me about the QUINT trial, or program I should call it, I have three guests, Harpreet Bajaj, that's right, LMC Healthcare in Toronto. Then we have Carol Wysham, the University of Washington, and finally Rich Bergenstahl at the International Diabetes Center in Minneapolis. So first of all, Harpreet, just tell us, what is the QUINT program?
So the QUINT is an acronym for Q-weekly or once weekly. QW comes from there. Insulin therapy. So the first two alphabets of insulin, IN, and then therapy, T. So that's what QUINT program gets the acronym from. And QUINT is the phase 3 program for the insulin efsitora, which is the once-weekly insulin in clinical development at this stage. There are 5 trials in this program. 4 of them are in people with type 2 diabetes, and QUINT 5 is in people with type 1 diabetes.
How is this even possible? So how do you do a once-weekly insulin?
And that's a great question, because until a few years ago, we would not have thought that would be one possible. Or second, there would be concerns around safety, hypoglycemia, etc. But the data that we've seen until now from efsitora with the phase 2 program first, and now with the release of the QUINT 2 and 5 data yesterday at the EASD, and then before that with Icodec, which is another once weekly insulin, we've seen very, very safe and efficacious data, at least in type 2 diabetes. And I think that's great. So how is it possible to protract the insulin action to at least have a half-life longer than 1 week? With efsitora, there's this alpha chain of the insulin molecule, which is attached to the Fc immunoglobulin to give it a prolonged half-life. So that's just a succinct mechanism of action of protraction of this insulin. That gives it a half-life. The efsitora has a half-life of 17 days, which is quite long.
Can I ask a really stupid question? What happens if the person, the individual receiving it, does something radically different in their daily life during that week period?
There's no stupid question, because we have to consider all possibilities, especially because this is a brand new, innovative, novel way of giving insulin. And people are not used to taking insulin once a week. They've been taking, when people who've been on insulin, they've been taking at least once a day insulin. And so...
And adjusting the dose.
And mishaps can happen, and they should be, I hope we can educate and counsel and try to avoid them, but then mishaps can happen. And I think just like with any other insulin, double dosing or triple dosing will happen at some point, but then we have to mitigate that by counseling as well as treatment for that hypoglycemia that may ensue.
Now, I'm getting the evil eye from Carol here.
So I actually...
Who, by the way, I should say, was responsible for the type 2 elements.
Yes, I presented yesterday. I think it's a misconception that patients with type 2 diabetes anyway adjust their insulin. They usually take the same dose. Once we find a dose that works, they take the same dose every day. So if they have a change in their daily activity, increase, go out and mow the lawn, for instance, they are at risk of having a low blood sugar. And it's similar with efsitora. And in fact, as demonstrated, at least in the type 1 study, the duration of hypoglycemia is no different, whether it's a once daily or a once weekly. So I think that has put our mind at ease.
Which is kind of astonishing.
Yeah, no, yes. I think Carol makes a really good point. We had to study all of these. If you get a low blood sugar, will you stay low longer with once weekly insulin? And the answer is no. if you take it and it lasts for 7 days, does it work differently from day one to two to three? And the answer is no.
It's, you see, now you've got me convinced on type two, but type one. So all the things that we've ever learned about type one and the kind of minute to minute adjustments and how they're so important to, you know, future complication of avoidance, you know, all that kind of thing. And now you're telling me once weekly for type one.
Make
the case for me.
Well, I'm telling you that it has promise. I think your instincts are right, that type one is more challenging because of all the daily adjustments and the other insulin, the bolus insulin, the mealtime insulin. So we showed that this efsitora can lower the hemoglobin A1C just the same rate as the once a day, but there was more hypoglycemia. So we have to be honest that you have to find the right dose to get them started, and the adjustment is more sensitive, more refined. So I think that we're still searching for refinements to, we've gotten the lowering the glucose. Now we want to get minimizing the hypoglycemia. There was more hypoglycemia than we wanted in this trial, but patients liked the insulin. When you do the surveys, they said, oh my gosh, I wish I could keep taking this. Now we just have to find that sweet spot of effectiveness without hypoglycemia.
And you've actually touched on the major point here, which is, and we should never forget this, that for people living with diabetes, there is an extraordinary burden placed on them by constantly having to monitor, you know, injection every day, or, you know, even with all the new technologies we have, it's still a burden. And once a week is a significant advance for them.
Yes. Yes, I agree. You know, one of the things that I'd like to point out is that our population with diabetes are living longer. We're doing a better job. They're doing a better job at controlling glucose and other risk factors. They're living longer. And one of the big promises for this once weekly is in now the older population who requires some assistance with their activities of daily living, and a once weekly insulin and a once weekly GLP-1, you know, the family member or friend or care partner could come in and administer the medication, and then the patient with diabetes would not have as much to worry about.
Upreach.
Yeah, especially in people with type 2 diabetes, I think it's a no-brainer that a once weekly insulin would reduce the burden of injection frequency from 365 injections in a year to 52 injections if they're just taking a basal insulin alone, which many people with type 2 diabetes are. But to your point about type 1 diabetes, will this insulin, if it is approved, be for everybody with type 1 diabetes? I don't think so. It'll have a niche population. As you mentioned, you know, in type 1 diabetes, we will need to continue to tweak and fine-tune insulin pump therapy, hybrid closed loop or closed loop therapy. People have their preferences, and some people don't want that, people with type 1 diabetes. And we have to listen to them and also have the option or another tool in our toolbox to offer to them as well. So I think that's where this will play a role.
So would it be fair to say work to be done still in type 1, really promising in type 2, and particularly valuable in a set of patients, people living with diabetes. Who are perhaps older, and you might combine it with, as you say, a GLP-1.
Well, and I actually foresee when this becomes available, having it as an offer to patients who are either starting insulin or who express an interest in the converting from their daily to once weekly. So I don't think it's going to be, you know, isolated to that niche that you speak of, but rather that is a particularly attractive place in which we could use this medication.
Were there any surprises from the study that you found?
No, I think the patients and the providers, you know, did an excellent job. I think the continual use of that continuous glucose monitoring. We haven't mentioned it, but it's such a key role in type 1 diabetes. You have your monitor, now you have your insulin. So I think just figuring out how to really use that continuous monitoring to get the right dose adjustments is going to be really a breakthrough to get this approved in type 1 diabetes. So,
if I may add, and on the same note, would you say, Rich, that at baseline, only about a quarter or less, or maybe one third right. of the participants being on or having used CGM, right. was that a surprise and a challenge for the study?
Maybe? Yeah, I think it was. And, you know, we now think that CGM is a standard for all people with type 1 diabetes. And when we started this trial, only a third of the people were using CGM. So they all had to be converted to CGM and learn that while they're learning this new insulin. So I think that's an important point. Yeah.
Well, congratulations to you all, because it's a really splendid set of a program. Well, it's an extraordinarily large program, really. And, you know, some of the complications that you've had in terms of getting people to learn CGM at the same time points to the extraordinary dedication of the people involved in the study to make all of this work out. Yeah. So fascinating, fascinating stuff. There'll be more on EASD TV very soon.
Thank you for joining us on the podcast of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes. We hope you enjoyed today's insights. If you did, go ahead and hit subscribe, and you'll always stay up to date with the latest in diabetes research and discoveries. And if you'd like to dive deeper, you can find plenty more information at EASD.org.